This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast is back for our second season, bigger and better than ever. Seriously though, this ish is huge. I'm your host, T-Pain. Every Tuesday, join me and my guest and my co-host for action-packed, hilarious, inspirational conversation. That's right, we're doing T-Pain Tuesday. We got the biggest guests, new drinks, new games, and crazy studio vibes. You already know what it is, and here's Nappy Boy Radio, baby. Listen and subscribe to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. Season 2 is available now, everywhere you get your podcast. You already know what it is. Come on through.
Hey guys, today on CarCast, we've got my friend Aaron Hagar joining us again. We're going to get a little bit into the Ford Bronco Raptor and Ken Block's new Gymkhana video with the all-electric Audi S1 Hoonatron. But before we get started, here's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator. DeAndrea, no Goldberg today. Goldberg's off filming NCIS Los Angeles. It'll be fun to see his character come back. I invited my good friend Aaron Hagar to come back onto the show. And I know we're kind of getting ready for SEMA as well. Well, good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on again. Sorry, I'm a little rough this morning. I was grinding metal all day yesterday.
Yep. You got to mask up. Is that a still thing? Still a thing?
Oh, I was masking up, but this is what gets through the mask.
Yeah.
A little crispy. It's the gas. It's the gas.
So next week's shows, I believe, are going to be a little different, probably for CarCast and Shift and Steer. It is SEMA week, so I'm going to be out there running around with our producer, Chris Loxamana, and grabbing a handful of interviews, booth to booth. It's actually one of my favorite shows to do over the year. You know, I'm just sort of an aftermarket parts fanatic.
Aren't we all?
I really used to be like an encyclopedia of the parts. Like, I would just know everything that was going on out there. And I think I've lost touch a little bit. And honestly, it really hit like with the COVID thing. And then there wasn't a lot of in-person interviews. And then everything was on Zoom. And the SEMA show was canceled, and that was done like virtually, and it wasn't that good the first year. And then the second year, did they do 2 years off? I don't remember. And then there's another event that we go to called MPMC. It's just like Manufacturers Performance Motorsports Council thing, and that's an event that I go to usually in January. And it's like speed dating. It's like at a hotel, and there's like 40 manufacturers there, right? Because Aaron's gone with me a few times.
It's totally like speed dating.
And like every 30 minutes, they ring a bell, and then you run to the next suite, like in a hotel, this next room. And you just sit down with the manufacturers, and they kind of go over all of the new parts that they have launching for the year. And they've got a few things like in the room, just like on the coffee table, or some displays they set up. And it's a cool event. It's a way to get like a, you know, 25-minute one-on-one conversation with the manufacturers just to kind of feel like what's going on every year. And the purpose of the event, it's an industry-only event. The purpose of the event is for, I guess, media publications, if you will, content creators, anyone doing car projects for magazines and YouTube and whatever, get a chance to meet with all the companies and go, hey, here's the project for this year. You know, it's going to be in Hot Rod Magazine or something like that. And or would they want to do some tech articles, like how to install a supercharger on a new C8 Corvette? What does that article look like? And they work with the manufacturers on getting parts involved and whatever. So it's a cool event. And we haven't had that event in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice way, too, because at SEMA, you're always inundated with noise and other people, and there's always distractions, and you really don't have meetings there. You have introductions. And then this other event is more the meetings.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, we spoke to Mike Spagnuolo at SEMA to talk a little bit about what the lay of the land's going to be this year. I went through and looked up a handful of the companies that we would normally run into or interview or say hi. And I noticed that quite a few of them are not there this year. But also I noticed quite a few new exhibitors. I don't know if they're first time exhibitors or maybe 2-3 years. That part I get. So yes, some of the big companies will not be there, and that's going to sort of change the landscape and the feeling of the SEMA show. But getting an opportunity to walk around and meet some new people and see some new products is kind of interesting. It's a little tougher to grab interviews with those groups because I oftentimes I book all the interviews ahead of time, right? So I don't know who all the new exhibitors are. So I actually have a schedule worked out. Like every 30 minutes, I'm jumping into a new booth to grab some interviews. So anyway, next week's shows, I think, are going to be a handful of interviews from SEMA. But one thing that I like to do that I've done, I think, pretty much almost every year that I've gone to SEMA, there might have been 1 or 2 years in there, is SEMA does this thing called the New Products Showcase. And they make aisles and aisles of new products just in glass display shelves, you know, like trophy cases. And it's just new products. And it's you could spend a little bit of time just walking up and down of these aisles and seeing all sorts of new products without even knowing who the companies are yet. And there's a little card or a little QR code you can scan to tell you what the company is, what the product is. It's literally like, here's the product. It could be from a new off-road bumper to a supercharger to new shocks, and it's just there on display, usually in a glass case with a little card that has like the manufacturer name, the part name, a couple of sentence or two about it, and like a retail price. And I would go through and, you know, probably snap pictures of, you know, 30% of the stuff that's in there and put together a big photo gallery for Facebook, just because Instagram doesn't allow me to do like 50, 60, 100 photos. And it's an interesting way to kind of just flip through and go, hey, here's a bunch of new products that are out there. And that's been sort of my one of the things I try to hit on every SEMA show. So if you go back to my Motorator Facebook page and look at years past, you'll be able to click through a bunch of those new products. So hopefully I'll be able to do that again. It's going to be a busy show. It's going to be kind of fun. Yeah. So as we get into that,
you're stressing me out already.
Well, this one's going to be a little bit different. We've got some friends going out there. We've got a few shows to go to and some events at night, and it's a little bit more relaxed. I've got my schedule planned a little bit better, but with enough sort of like wing it to not, you know, to be able to do other things and not feel stressed about, I got to be here, I got to be here, I got to be here. I've actually packed most of my interviews, CarCast interviews, into one day, right?
Oh,
so so I can pick up something later. So like Wednesday while I'm there will be the busiest day. And Chris and I'll just run around and get as many interviews as we can. And there's going to be, you know, it's going to be half a dozen or so, I think. There's only so much you can get.
And how many exhibitors do we have this year? Is it like 1,000 exhibitors or something?
I believe there's more than that. So don't quote me on this, but there's always been a couple of thousand, maybe 3,000, 2,500 exhibitors in the past.
And that's right. I only see 1,000. That's right.
That's right. That's right. You know, keep in mind we've got that West Hall, which is the expansion for the convention center, and they've been building that out a little bit more. Building it out meaning filling it out with more exhibitors. North Hall is always something we want to cruise through because, you know, our car audio guys are there. A lot of electronics are there. The tools and stuff are there, although that might have been expanded into West Hall now. I'm not quite sure. So the Ford out front area has been replaced with eBay's version. It's an eBay experience. They're going to be drifting and doing some stuff with Hoonigan. That'll be kind of interesting. And don't forget, if the lines are not long, there's the tunnel. There's the boring tunnel with the Teslas in it. So if you need to go from Central Hall to that parking lot over to West Hall, you can go underground and ride in the Tesla.
And that's right.
And not walk as far.
And we got to see a little bit of that in Ken Block's new video. I hadn't seen it yet. I hadn't seen that yet.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
That must be the tunnel. I was all excited.
So let's get into that. I've got some car stuff to get into, but Ken Block's got a new video, a new Gymkhana video. It's interesting. It's, you know, he's gone through, I think, Subaru in the beginning, big thing with Ford, you know, the Hoonigan truck, the Hoonigan Mustang, some really cool stuff. I love the LA video with the Hoonigan Mustang. His new deal is with Audi. And I think he started his like rally career in an Audi S1. So they sort of wanted to make a new modern interpretation of that car. So they made an all electric Audi S1 Hoonatron.
Right.
The video is through Vegas. It's through the strips of, you know, the strip of Vegas, through some parking garages, through the tunnel, and it was cool to see. You watched the video, right?
Yeah. So my only opinion is that I think for once he needed music. I think for once he needed a soundtrack because that little Tron noise, it doesn't get you as far. You know, there's not a lot of tire burning. There's not a lot of engine revving. There's no limiters. It's just, I don't even know what the sound was.
Yeah. But you know what? You know what's interesting is because noticeably there was no soundtrack.
I know.
But
silence was key.
But actually a lot less sound completely, like not a lot of tire squeal. When he's doing the slow motion like smoky donuts and stuff. They cut the sound out of it, you know. They kind of did sort of the stylistic kind of slow-mo thing, and it looked cool. Listen, it shot beautifully.
Oh, man.
I mean, so much work put into it.
So much work. And I think silence was very intentional. And it was gorgeous because you focused on it. I mean, I watched it on my phone. Unfortunately, I should have streamed it to my giant TV, to my obnoxiously big TV, so I could really get impact. But I think the silence was so much part of it because Vegas is so noisy and it's so full of life and energy. This was the sole thing in Vegas other than a few little appearances, and I think that was very cool and very intentional. It was a neat video.
You should definitely go and watch it. And there's a video that he did prior to this where he was in Germany at Audi's design studio, and they explained the car and what they were doing and the design theme for it. When I watched the video, I couldn't help but just think the whole time, what does it cost to shut down Vegas?
Oh, I know.
I'm pretty sure that when he did the San Francisco video
during the pandemic. Free.
Free, right? That's a good question. When was it? I don't think he did it during the pandemic.
No.
No.
But maybe they threatened and Vegas cleared out for the day.
I, I mean, it was dark, so but it's not like midnight dark. It's got to be like 3 a.m. dark, like really deep hours of the night. And you can see when he's going down the strip, it was shut down and there was fans. There was people lined up to see what was going on as he shoots out onto that. And then other than that, they really did a good job of kind of making it like Night of the Comet. Like, no, like,
totally.
You know what I'm saying? Like yeah, total cool. Ghost town there. So that was kind of cool to see. But I think the San Francisco video, I read somewhere, and I don't know how accurate it is, but the permit to the city of San Francisco to like do 4 days of filming and shut down during the off hours, like 4 nights in a row, was like $1 million just to the city.
Oh, I bet.
So, unless they shot this video for $100,000 and they paid Vegas $1 million to shut it down. These are not inexpensive things to produce.
No. I mean, this is a full on film. I mean, you're talking all the crew, all the permits, all the everything, best cameras, drones, you know, high def, 8K, whatever they shot it in. It was definitely high tech and state of the art. Like Audi.
and they got to do it a few times. There's like 50 different GoPros out there. Of course, when you watch it, look, people ask, is it done in one take? And it's not done in one take. And mostly because they want to get different angles and different views. And they want to – this you don't notice as much, but they want to – reuse a particular location, like an intersection or something, but make it look like a completely different scene because you're doing different stuff in that intersection and you shoot it differently. So you can take like a section of the strip and have them come flying out of a hotel and spin around and then shoot down left. And then you can go, well, we've got the permit. That's the area we're allowed to use. That's what we've paid for. So later in the video, maybe he shoots out from a different direction, the other side, and goes a different, you know, turns right instead of left. And it looks very different, but because you got two different sides of the strip, for example, you're shooting one side and then shooting the other. But that's how you would reuse, you know, a particular scene or scenery, if you will, because you're only permitted to allow to do so much.
Right. And anybody who's ever worked on a film set or seen a film set, I mean, the tagline is hurry up and wait. Because it takes so long to set up shots and so long to set up the lighting and get everything, and then rehearsals and practice and takes. And I'm curious how many days they shot it. I know there was more urgency because it was Vegas, but I could imagine it had to be a multi-day shoot. I don't think they could get all that in one night.
Yeah, I don't think they got it all in one night. And then it's kind of interesting because Vegas is always so busy that even scouting it out and then looking at it, because you'll see him like come out through a parking garage and the car jumps a little. And then you're like, oh, but there's a ramp that they made to get the right angle for it. So somebody was there measuring and doing stuff. And of course, maybe during work hours, somebody's out there with some equipment trying to measure it and get the angle and go, will it fit here? And will it fit here? And is it going to land right? And before you even get the permits to try to do it.
I don't think we can even begin to imagine how much work and how much science goes into one of those episodes. I mean, it's breathtaking, you know.
Well, you can look at the credits because there's a long list of people involved. There's a long list of people. So the car is
Guy Bolton Stick.
It's the S1 Hunitron. The S1 Hunitron. It's all electric. It's all wheel drive. It's based off of the S1 Pikes Peak car,
right? Which is
from the 80s, and it's kind of a short wheelbase, crazy aero, big wing in the front, big wing in the back. The style of it is interesting because the rear fender goes straight up and forms the wing as sort of one piece. Yeah. It's got a cool look to it. I know that they were building this other car, this Pikes Peak Porsche, and they brought it out to Pikes Peak, and I was out there this year. And then I think it broke during the testing, so he never even got to run it. So they brought it out to, like, you know, the pre-party event, and you could kind of see it there. But yeah, shit happens. That's racing. It's a brand new car. It's the first event.
Plus, I mean, when he was hitting the heavy bags, you know, on
yeah,
the
that's true. Yeah.
I was like, how many wings did they go through?
I was thinking that too, because they're.
I don't care what you put in those things. When you hit them that hard, you're going to break something.
Yeah, my guess is they were just like foam pebbles, like nothing
in
it, right?
Of course, yeah.
And then they put you put like a bunch of like baby powder and stuff around it, so when you hit it, it has that poofy kind of smoke thing.
However, when he hit it, it did have some weight, because if it didn't have weight, it would have just come up from the top and kind of circled, and they swung on impact. So if they swung on impact, they carried some weight. So they had that measured out. Probably in the bottom was sand. So
yeah.
So maybe it didn't collapse in the middle when he hit it. It stayed. You know what I mean?
Maybe there was a little camera guy inside each bag. Yeah. So what Aaron's talking about, there's a scene in the video where he goes up at the top of a parking garage, and there's a ring with a boxing match, and there's heavy bags like all around the corners, you know, kind of the edges of the roof of this parking garage.
And he sideswipes.
That's right. He drifts and uses his rear, you know, the tail of the car to smack all of these things. So it was interesting. It was cool to see. A little different for sure, being electric. The sound and everything is very different.
Like, how do you make these episodes? I mean, you know, I will admit, I don't know which episode this is. I probably missed a few.
Yeah, I think it's 11.
Oh man, yeah, I missed quite a few, but I mean, it's like, you know, I like his work. I'm a fan. The cars are beautiful. He's a nice guy. I met him a couple times, but you know, I can't keep up with him all the time. You know, I can't keep up with him, but he keeps him interesting. I gotta say, you know, it's like you would think, it's a one trick pony. I've kind of seen it done. Not at all. And the e-tron this new Audi one is definitely another exception. It's incredible visually, but it's interesting. Even the silence is interesting. You know, the little Tron noises are interesting. You know, Vegas, of course, is interesting, and Ken's driving skills are always just off the map. And he's doing some different stuff in this too. I noticed too when he's doing the 360s, the donuts. He really stays in place more than like, you know, he could not have to circle something. If you notice that wheel stayed planted in the outside corner,
yeah,
or inside corner, and the car kind of went around that one wheel. It's almost like they were able to lock up that one wheel and stay at a central pivot. Neat stuff, you know. And he was doing a lot more long drifts and 360s and those long drifts.
Yeah, a lot of 360s, a lot of like kind of firing out and spinning around and going forward again. And I wonder if the dynamics of the all-wheel drive, because the
electric all-wheel drive.
Yeah, so it's based off of the RS e-tron GT, which is an all-wheel drive, I think 637 horsepower vehicle. I would imagine that they were able to increase the horsepower significantly because, you know, the e-tron is 637 horsepower, but it has to go like 230 miles, you know.
Right.
And in this particular case, they could probably use as much battery as possible and go, well, you've got a 52-mile range, right? And but we can capitalize on that power and get you 1,000 horsepower. But yeah, maybe because if there's an electric motor on each wheel, you can control the speed of that now, which allows him to sort of spin in place, sort of Batmobile-ish kind of thing. So I wonder if the dynamics of it are a little bit different. But, you know, he's still hitting his brake and is still doing his slides, and like it was configured up to be much like his other cars.
Yeah. But you could also see that the characteristics of an electric car are quite different. You know, like the mechanics of it are quite different. I don't think you can modulate it as much as you can a fuel-based car. So I think his drifts were different. His turn-in points were different. You know, there was a lot of stuff technically being electric that I think was very different. I've heard it's very hard to drive and drift an electric car because it's kind of on or off, you know, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting. I wonder what they can do with sort of, I guess, throttle mapping, for lack of a better term, to make that work. But also just the dynamics of power, like a lot of torque on the low end. So hitting hard with the four wheel spinning and you know, just breaking loose four tires is probably different. You don't have to kind of rev it and like drop a clutch or anything like that, right? You could just the power alone would probably just break that thing loose.
Yeah. You know what else is probably amazing is that all these questions we have, he probably answered in an interview documentary that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it's probably there. It's all probably there. It's probably there. But anyway, it's worth a shot. Go yes. Check it out. I think it's kind of a fun video. I like Ken, and I think his videos are fun. He certainly created a category, you know, like mm-hmm. for everyone else doing similar things. And then I'm all for it. Why not? Just go and try to produce some of this content. It's fun to see. But yeah, this is it's a cool video. Okay, so turning the page. I didn't get a chance to get on this for the past couple of shows because we had some guests on there, but I got an opportunity to drive the Bronco Raptor.
Oh.
Yeah, so I've driven several of the Bronco the F-150 Raptors. From the Gen 1s to the Roush 1 to the Gen 2, not the new Raptor R yet. I think maybe they're just doing like a press drive, like literally as we speak somewhere. Now, I drove the standard Bronco a little bit off-road at the Bronco Off-Rodeo event. I did like a short version, like an hour-long version in Vegas prior to SEMA last year. Did get to spend a lot of time out there, but my first driving experience in the Bronco was just getting in there and doing this off-road thing and learning some of the, you know, the goat modes and the, you know, the sway bar, disconnect, whatever, all the kind of the off-roady features. And admittedly, that's not my forte, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Aaron onto the show, because Aaron goes in the dirt, lives in the forest.
I haven't driven one.
You haven't driven one yet. That's okay.
Because they're not British.
So Bronco Raptor, I will say this. I don't really have an opportunity to go off-road. It was not something I really got into. Not that I don't think it's interesting and could be a lot of fun, because I've done a lot of stuff in the dirt. I've done the high-speed stuff as well. I took Raptors on the short course in Vegas and jumped the thing and took out some of their sport, like these trophy trucks, and hit the tabletops and the whoops and the, you know, and it's fun to do. But just living out here in, you know, sort of the Venice Beach area, I don't really go out and go a lot of camping or overlanding or do any of that stuff. So that being said, I will admit the Bronco Raptor is, I'm not the right audience for it. This is not the vehicle for me. So driving it around town, some of the things that I noticed are probably very commonplace for Jeeps and Broncos and off-roaders. So bear with me when I just say it's loud. The tires make a lot of noise. The doors feel light and flimsy because they're meant to come off and you don't want to lift them too heavy, and there's no sound deadener in them. The Bronco Raptor is the four-door. I like the size of it. It's about the same height as my truck, my F-150 Lightning, and the same width, but much shorter, and so easier to park. I had it with the hard top, and the hard top had like the thin like glue-in headliner or whatever they're putting in there. Not necessarily, you know, like a Dynamat or some sort of sound deadener. I'm not really sure what they're putting in it. I think it's more cosmetic. So, you know, there's some wind noise. You know, when you're driving that thing and you're on the freeway and you're trying to, you know, make a call or something, people are going to hear a little bit of that noise. So that's what I noticed driving around town with the thing. You know, the big tires you're going to hear, the wind noise you're going to hear. That being said, it's cool as shit. Like, you know, being up that high, knowing its capabilities, just trying to Go underneath it and see what's going on. Look at the suspension system. Excuse me. Run over curbs or just anything fun like that just to see how it goes. Like,
I'll just park here.
Yeah, just, you know, find speed bumps in the neighborhood and do it at 60 miles an hour just to see what happens. And
hear that tire chirp.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit of that. Yeah, right. The interior and stuff all kind of designed to be easily cleaned. You know, the typical buttons that are on the steering wheel are just sort of a like a single rubber button with graphics on it. So it has like you can kind of wipe it down without getting all dust and dirt within the little crevices, the lines that break the buttons apart.
Smart.
You know, so, you know, it had some neat features like that that I thought were very cool. And everything seemed to work really well. I didn't have any issues with, like, the infotainment system and stuff like that. I mean, I'm driving the new Z, which we'll get into another episode. But already 50% of the time, the new Z – and I like the car. It's cool. It's got good power. And it's a good – a lot of car for the money. 50% of the time, the CarPlay, it syncs, but when you hit CarPlay on the infotainment system, it doesn't do anything. And you can hear somebody like send you a text message and it beeps through the audio system, but you can't, you know, if you're like listening to the radio and you want to click over to CarPlay to get the message, it doesn't pop up. And then later it randomly does. So there's a couple little issues there. Now, granted,
you're saying it's glitchy.
It's a little glitchy. It's a little glitchy. Now, of course, that's just my experience. That won't necessarily be everybody else's experience because when they handed me the car and they're like, here you go, it's a prototype. It's like, gotcha.
Right. Right.
Which means glitchy.
But do they just say that?
Yeah, right. They probably noticed that the CarPlay wouldn't connect or something. And they're like, oh, let's just say it's a prototype. So Bronco Raptor starts at 70,000. The one I drove is like 74,000 and change. Where does that fit into the Jeep world?
More than anything I know, unless you got the big V8 in it,
right? Like the 392 Jeep, right?
Yeah, the 390. Yeah, my Gladiator, fully equipped Mojave, was 60. So yeah, it's quite a bit over. But they're cool, man. I gotta say, I tried to get a Bronco. I wasn't going to get a Gladiator. I was going to get a Bronco. And even with my contacts at Ford, it was like, nope. So, because I wanted the two-door hardtop. And if I didn't get a launch edition back then. So I bought a Gladiator, but I still like the Bronco. I haven't experienced one yet. I haven't driven one. I haven't sat in one. I've seen them. When I was shooting with Nicole Johnson, we were shooting an episode of her Detour with the Pinsgar recently. And some guy up there on the trail had one, and she jumped in it and started doing stuff in it. And, you know, I was a little envious because I wanted to jump in it. But
yeah,
but yeah, I haven't experienced one. I still like them. I'm on the fence about whether I want to spend another 60 or 70 grand I don't have and get one. But yeah, I don't know. Go full enchilada. If you're going to do it, do it.
Yeah, you know? I think the Bronco Raptor is probably the way to go if you're gonna get into it.
Well,
unless your plan is to do a lot of the modifications yourself. Some people want to do their own thing. So this has the BF Goodrich all terrain, the K02 tires. It's got the Fox Live Valve 3.1 dampers on it.
Awesome.
13-inch wheel travel up front, 14 in the rear.
How are you going to improve 5, 000, all that?
Yeah, 5,764 pounds, which is a bit more than heavy. The four-door Sasquatch version.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
It doesn't look heavy. When you look at it, it looks stout, but it doesn't look heavy. It doesn't look heavy.
Right.
It doesn't look heavy.
You know, the fender flares, I think, cosmetically are not my favorite, but I think the aftermarket can address that. Again, these vehicles being so modular, you can take so many panels on and off.
So many options, yeah.
The 3-liter, so the engine is a 3-liter V6. It's the twin turbo V6. It's 418 horsepower and 440 pound feet of torque.
That's enough.
And it felt quick to me. I think Car and Driver, somebody tested it 0 to 60 in 5.6 seconds, ran 14.4s in the quarter mile. But it, but it, yeah, but it felt quick to me. Like it was fun to kind of, you know, hit those on ramps and just open it up and see what it does. You know,
Here's the most interesting thing by you saying it felt quick to me is, have you driven a Range Rover Evoque? Right? A little four cylinder.
Yeah, I think it's a while ago. Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's an i3 or something, you know, less than 200 horsepower. I mean, it's just a little tinker toy, right? That thing gets up and goes. I mean, you're going like, holy hell, this thing's quick. It appears to get up and go. When you look at the statistics on paper, like, it ain't that fast.
It feels fast.
The way they can manipulate mapping and torque vectoring and all these things that they have available now can really give you a different experience in a vehicle. And I find that really impressive, that us old school guys of give me muscle, give me more power, you almost don't need it. You want to compromise and have some efficiency, but you still want that experience. And the new mappings that they have are really, really smart. And like you just said, you have the experience of this thing got up and went, but it obviously has the numbers to complement that. But the driving experience these days is really impressive. I mean, you know, things that are turbocharged, especially, you know, they're working with smaller turbos and sequence and everything just feels faster, and it's a greater experience with less displacement. You know,
I would add to that, with the 10-speed transmission, you can get a little bit lower gear out of the hole. And
I forgot about that 10-speed transmission.
That's right.
Most of my vehicles have 3 or 4,
and they still weigh more. Right, the transmission weighs a lot more.
It's got
3 or 4 giant gears as opposed to 10 little adorable ones.
Right, purple man, it's got a 14-inch diameter.
Yeah, right.
And then, belt on it.
Now, keep in mind, the sensation of speed is there. You get into your, all electric vehicle, and you don't really hear that much. This thing, like right when it starts moving, you hear that wind noise and that tire noise, and you're like, oh, like when we were talking on Shift and Steer a while back, like being on the boat.
Yeah,
you know, doing 60 miles an hour in a boat feels like you're doing 115, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, the driving experience in an age of so much tech, you would think we'd be losing the driving experience. And we do on some vehicles. There's economy cars. There's you know, just your typical commuters. But for the most part, there's something out there for everyone. And the experience that we're getting in some of these vehicles, even the electric vehicles, is pretty thrilling. I have to say, it's getting me interested.
You've got to come down at some point and drive my Ford Lightning, because it's electric, but it's full-size F-150, and it just doesn't – like, it's cool and it's fun, but it doesn't feel right, because you're like, it's so big and it shouldn't be – going this quick offline, and it should be making a lot more noise, and you're like, it kind of makes you grin. It's kind of like a roller coaster.
Awesome.
I know you guys can go online and dig into the specs of the Bronco Raptor, so I just kind of wanted to give my thoughts on driving it. But it, of course, it has a lot of the cool features you would expect. It's got a lot of all the plates and protection underneath. It's even got some like loops and stuff welded around the muffler to guard the shell of the muffler as you're going off-roading. And it's got a lot of cool stuff for it.
As we
talked about the gears, it's got a 470 gear with Dana axles.
Oh, yeah. It's already equipped. I mean, these guys really, the Ford engineering really went after not only the heritage and legacy, but the off-road capabilities, you know, keeping up with Jeep, who just seems like, well, they own it. No, we're seeing a lot more Broncos in town in Tahoe, and seeing a lot more stuff going through the Rubicon that's not a Jeep. So I love it. I think it's great. But bring on the diversity, bring on, you know, competition yields innovation. And I love it, you know.
And there's a big range here, because a Bronco Raptor is roughly twice the cost or more of a base Bronco. So you can kind of start on any level that you want to and build upon that. And I would say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've just seen the friends that are in the overlanding space, guys like you and Richard Waitis from Magnaflow, prefer to do a lot of the modifications on your own. You pick what you want. And I think that ability to customize is why Broncos and, of course, Jeeps for a long time, but the Bronco will do well with some of the smaller engine options. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is the big motors and the same, you know, in off-roading in general, I don't care that I have a big motor. I need an efficient motor because if I'm out on the trail for a long distance, you know, I don't want to have range anxiety with fueling issues. But as long as I can, you know, get through obstacles and get up hills and carry the weight and the load that I've put into the vehicle, I'm happy. And four cylinders definitely struggle. I have a 5-cylinder turbo diesel in one of my vehicles and a 6-cylinder in the other, non-turbo, and they do wonderfully. You know, the big old V8s, you know, they can overheat, you know, you lug them a lot. You know, I think the turbo 6 is probably a really good decision on that, unless you're towing, you know, that then you need, you know, more torque. That's why we use diesels and such. But I think for off-roading, I think the 6 is killing it out there. I think it's the perfect engine.
Let's get into your vehicles real quick. You've got two overlanding vehicles that you've been working on for a while, and which works out great because one of them is usually in the shop and you have to be able to pick between which one you want. you pick the Jeep Gladiator that you mentioned.
That's part of the decision.
Right. You're like, let's get a Jeep Gladiator so we can go off-roading and have it be pretty reliable. And then, which I know you like that thing, but I would say your favorite wouldn't be that. It's the Land Rover, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's an old diesel 110 Defender.
What year is it?
Well, it's mixed.
What year did it start off at?
93, 94, 95, 99. It's well, all the above. You know, and that's the thing is when you import these vintage vehicles, it does have an NAS title. But as you import these vintage vehicles, this one's been modified. It's got a 99 TD5 in it. So it's a very rare version of a 110. It's got a safety cage, which is unique to the NASs. This one has been refitted and refurbished in the late 90s and brought back. And so I had no problem cutting it up recently. Yeah, so I cut it up and I cut the roll cage. I put an IUCAP Icarus roof on it. So it has a removable roof. So the whole roof pops up and you can stand up inside the vehicle. And then I had to re-weld and reassemble the safety cage and try to keep as much of its safety features intact, which I think I succeeded. But yeah, so to me, the Land Rovers are really like the old Jeeps and maybe the old Troopers are really the iconic off-road vehicles, you know, and you can throw Ford in there too. But I grew up loving the Land Rovers. So this still embodies that for us, which is why I have it. But yeah, we wanted something more reliable. We're having a trip in the early spring to do the Arctic Circle, and I would love to take the Defender. But yeah, if we have some issues, it's going to be really hard to fix. It's going to be really hard to get parts for. We're going to be a lot more remote. I think the Jeep is being petrol as well is going to be a better drive and more comfortable for my wife and I, and she can drive it too because she doesn't prefer to drive a stick, especially in technicals. So, sorry, I got someone trying to call in here, but and so yeah, for us, we had the luxury of having several vehicles. And don't forget, I also have the Pinsgauer. So in that limitation, the Pinsgauer sits idle a lot. Because I don't drive it off the mountain because it has so little horsepower and so much torque that it's so wonderful off-road locally. I don't want to drive it off the mountain because I'm going to be doing 25 or 30 miles per hour trying to climb back up it. So that's not something I would take out of town. So yeah, you know, they each kind of have their own purpose. And if I had an old Willys or an M38 or an CJ2A or something, which I've had, same thing. I don't drive those out of town too. There's people that do, but great to go through the Rubicon if you really, really want to work hard and have that experience and dress the part and drink out of an old jerry can, you know. But But yeah, there's something for everyone. But sometimes I just want to jump in the Jeep and push a button and heat my seat, my right. steering wheel when it's cold, and you know, and kiss my wife without reaching across the, you know, the globe, and drive through some wilderness. It's great. Or to have my son, who's not as experienced, or my daughter, jump in it and follow us down a trail. While we're driving something more challenging like the Defender or the Pinscour. So it's, yeah, we have kind of the perfect scenario. And I have Alucab on the Defender and on the Gladiator. So we did the Alucab canopy camper, which is like a cab over. So I removed the tailgate and glued on a camper shell. And it is awesome. Yeah. Absolutely awesome.
I saw the pictures recently of the Land Rover with the mods and stuff you did on it. But you know, that one was a little more complicated. That's an installation. That's a hell of a job.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's to my knowledge, it's never been done. First of all, no one's going to cut up an NAS because they're worth too much money. But the complications of the safety cage and the integrity of the safety cage, no one wants to do it, I guess. I did it. It wasn't a big deal. I had to mod some things. I had to shorten and figure out some new angles, but I used entirely the cage. I figured I'm cutting it up. I'm going to keep cutting it up. And I used parts and pieces and sleeved them on the inside so they hold some of their structure. The side structure is completely intact. The rollover for the driver and passenger is completely intact. Now I made it, I took the rear seats out. So it's a two-seater now. So we're completely intact. I didn't touch any of that cage. The top portions of the cage are gone now, but I have the structure of the Alucab, which is, I don't know how many times more robust than the original roof. So I say there's still a lot of integrity in there. And I bet you on a rollover, it would still keep us pretty well intact. I think the side of our faces would get completely bashed because, I mean, you could barely turn the thing. You got to roll the window down, stick your elbow out because they're so narrow inside. So, yeah, we're going to get beat to shit, but I think we'll survive.
Right, yeah. Well, it's a cool
let's
rig.
Let's not do that. Let's not go there.
When you take it out and test it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, not the crashing part, but the right. rig that's yeah, all yeah. kind of built. Like, we're yeah. going to SEMA soon. I assume you're driving out, but you're not going to drive one of
the. No, I can't. I want to drive that, but no, it doesn't fit in the parking garage. Yeah, no, we have to drive my wife's little family car. But yeah.
I wasn't sure if you had to bring something out to also display, right? Because,
no,
you know, like.
I hope next year. You know, I'm working with Alucab and OK Off Road and Northwest Defenders and Tiny Rig and. You know, Kicker and all these other wonderful companies. So I'm hoping somebody will want it, especially for Overland, having it be probably the only one in the world. I'm hoping that Alucab or OK Off Road or Tiny Rig or one of these companies will want it out there. You know, I have to go through a distributor to get the Alucab stuff, but Alucab's been really supportive and giving me a pretty hefty discount on this stuff. And GP Factor's making some cool stuff for the 110 Defenders, so I'm hoping to outfit some stuff with those guys. And so I'm really hoping it can see SEMA next year. It's got a little bit of battle wound, just enough to still be tidy but be well used. It's not a trailer queen. I drive this thing
I know.
At 125,000 miles in it, I drive it. And the same with the Jeep. You know, the Jeep is typical. I haven't done anything special or unique, but Kicker is going to completely go through it next year. With budget, we're going to fully replace the sound system and do some graphics and have some fun. Yeah, we'll see. But next year, this year I'm not bringing anything. You know, it's cold now. It's in the 20s at night. And unless we go somewhere, I'm kind of booked through early next year. I don't have a day literally to do anything. I can't even finish the interior, which I'm really kind of depressed about because I'm hard in it right now and I have to literally stop. Today's my mom's birthday. I got to go down to Marin, then SEMA, then New York, and then I got to do commission work for the holidays. I do a lot of painting during.
And when's the big Arctic trip?
I think spring of next year. So it's really weather related. So obviously we want to get as far north as we can. So it can't be too cold and frozen over. So we have to wait for it to thaw. But if we do it too late in the season, we also run a risk of everything starts to get closed up and some of the ice roads disappear. And ice roads, yeah, it gets pretty gnarly. So we definitely want to you know, we definitely want to hit that spot. Mosquitoes, I think, are going to be our biggest factor, and some fuel range. Yeah. So we're up to some fuel, and the mosquito thing is quite serious. Unless you like them.
You gotta get one of those little hats with the...
Oh, yeah, you betcha.
With the screens in front of it. But you need one of those for Pesto, little Pesto the dog.
You know, I keep thinking, are we going to bring the dog? I don't know if I could be without my dog. I don't know if we can do it for a month and a half. But, my wife's laughing. Yeah, I know, but I don't think he should go. I think that'll cause us so much stress.
Tammy keeps saying you should bring Pesto to Vegas because her dogs are gone.
I know, but we can't leave him in the hotel. Misha goes to FEMA with me most of the time. We can't take him to the event. So what are we going to do? You know,
I'm not boarding him.
I'm not boarding him, so we don't board our dog with strangers.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to wrap things up, but I appreciate you being on the show. Thanks for filling in for Goldberg today as he's filming.
Goldberg? Yeah. I better put up some weight. I got skinny arms.
His garage is off the hook. That thing he's been building. I've been doing some updates on social media. It's really coming together. Some of the cosmetic stuff is going up. The facades on the outside and the inside of the building, and it's exciting. And then, yeah, as you were saying, being super busy is like, yeah, he's, you know, Barrett Jackson, SEMA, you know, all these events coming up. So he's gonna take a break from that. And then he's gonna get home and maybe just see a bunch of this shit done all at once. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be kind of exciting.
Shooting big rifles, big pistols, one in each hand.
Yes, he does quite a bit of that.
One-handed.
Yes.
Damn, I've shot that for the recoil, and that's definitely a two-handed in the shoulder deal. And he's holding out with a bent elbow. You're going, damn, dude.
He's a big boy that plays with some big boy weapons. That's for sure.
You know, Matt, I just realized I haven't been to Southern California. I was going to say, I haven't seen your new place, Carlos. I haven't seen, you know, Golden. I haven't seen anything. I think the last time I went to L.A., we did a live show at Brad's real quick. Was that almost 2 years ago?
Maybe. Year and a half? Yeah, maybe.
Not this year. I don't think I've been to L.A. this year. Oh, man. Yeah. Poof. I'm sorry.
Well.
I'm sorry, Leno. I owe you some stuff. I've got two baskets full of stuff for you. I'll get it to you eventually.
Yeah, he's been texting me. He's all pissed. He's like, what's going on with Hagar? Fucking Hagar.
Well, they sponsored our rally, our Napa Valley 750 this year. So yeah. I have a gift bag and a gift basket full of merch and stuff from the event. And I'm so sorry. I haven't been to SoCal. I haven't made it out there. No excuse.
We'll have to plan something pretty soon. Maybe when you get a little too cold up there, you'll come to LA and it's only 60
you betcha.
Something.
You bet. I want to drive the mini winter.
Yeah, right. Take a little break. All right, we're going to wrap things up. Right. Aaron Hagar, thanks so much for being on the show. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Gather around for Halloween with Pluto TV's 31 Nights of Horror. All month long, Pluto TV is bringing you the best Halloween movies, shows, and more. Watch classic horror movies like The Grudge or The Blair Witch Project, or scream along with your favorite stars like Ryan Reynolds in Life. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows. The best part, it's so free, it's chilling. No credit card, no sign up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start screaming now.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.